Session number 16909, Albert Hanscom, part one.
Where were you born, please?
I was born in West Ham in London.
Which year was this?
1919.
Now, towards the end of 1940, you were in North Africa.
Yes.
As a soldier. Which unit were you with?
I was with the 9th Battalion, the Rifle Brigade.
And what rank did you hold?
Rifleman.
When had you arrived in North Africa?
Towards the end of 1940.
In December?
Yes. Yes.
When you disembarked, where did you go to at first?
I think the place was called Kwasasin. It was a sort of staging camp.
And which company of the 9th Battalion were you in?
I was in Headquarter Company.
In a particular platoon?
I was on wireless.
What happened to you at Kwasasin?
Well, it was, we were only there temporarily until they decided, where we were actually going.
Where were you going to?
Up to the desert. I'd arrived with the 2nd Armoured Division in Egypt, but our brigade was selected to go up into the desert to take over from General Wavell's troops that were up there already. The rest went to Greece and Crete. And I suppose after a matter of a couple of weeks, we then started our journey up through Egypt to Mirza Matru and up onto the plateau and then right the way through to, I think the town or whatever was called Agilia. That was where the 8th Army had got to in pushing back the Italians.
Were you given any briefing about what was going to happen?
No. At that time, the Army didn't believe in letting you know what was happening or what you were to do. But we were just sort of put up there, put in position and waited. And we didn't have to wait very long. We'd heard nothing, no news at all about Germans being in North Africa, but by God, we found out very shortly. They suddenly hit us, and in 24 hours, we were non-existent. We lost the entire B Company, except for their company commander.
Was this an air attack or a ground
attack?
No,
a ground attack. Well, it was everything. I mean, I've heard afterwards that the actual size of the ground forces wasn't as many as we at first thought. But, boy, they came through us like a dose of salts.
What was your first indication of the attack? What were you doing?
Well, just normal duties around. I mean, we weren't expecting anything. It just suddenly occurred. I mean, the next thing you knew that there was shells, bullets, aircraft, you name it, it was there, it was going. And we just got knocked sideways. And the way it started, I mean, we just had to withdraw. There was no two ways about it. And I mean, I don't know whether we had any tanks or not up there at that time, because as you can appreciate, the original 8th Army I'd worn everything right down to the bare roots sort of thing, because that journey that they had to take of the troops going forward, they didn't have the necessary equipment to replace it at those times, and there just wasn't a lot we could do except to try and get things out and withdraw to wherever we could sort of reorganise again. But I got as far as Derna Hill, and we were just coming up Derna Hill in my Wallace truck. I was sitting next to the driver, and I suddenly saw this German tank in the distance, and I no sooner saw it than there was such a tremendous crash, and a shell came whistling straight through the cab. I lost my pal, the driver, and I just undid the door, whipped off my headset, because I was sitting in the front with him operating it. And I was out the door, and I rolled on the ground across the road and off the far side. And I got myself together, climbed up the slope to the roadway and looked across to see if I could do anything for my pal. But unfortunately, he was beyond recognition. And I knew it was hopeless to go back there. And so I thought, right, well, the best thing is to get back down onto the sand, make towards the coast, and make for the nearest town.
So the tank hit you when you were withdrawing from the place where the Germans launched the attack?
That's right.
What was that place where you were when they first attacked?
At Agilia. And I think that's the way they pronounce the place.
And when they attacked Agila, was it broad daylight?
Oh yes. It wasn't at night. It was first thing in the morning, and it went on for the rest of that day and the following day, where they just started to keep us going. And you could see troops withdrawing all around you. And I fell in with two or three other chappies out of my regiment, plus artillery and other chaps out of the, I think it was King's Royal Rifles. And we sort of decided that we would make for the nearest town, which would have been Tobruk. And that's what we did.
I don't suppose you know the date of the German attack, do you?
Oh, to be honest, I couldn't. I know it was the early part of 41, but I'd only be guessing at dates. And we eventually got to Tobruk, and I met the officer who I'd been with, and he'd left us earlier in the morning before the attack to go to one of the companies, and he'd managed to get through and come back, and I met up with him just outside of Tobruk. And finally he sort of got together all our rifle brigade chappies, and I suppose there were about 30 of us that finished in Tobruk with the Australian, I think it was the Australian 6th Division that had been sort of put in Tobruk to hold it.
Did you get your wireless equipment out?
No. I mean, the shell had done its duty. It had absolutely demoralised the cab and where the set was in the back. And I never even got my rifle. I mean, when that shell came through that cab, I can assure you, there was no, it never sort of entered your head. It was just get out of the vehicle and get away.
What condition were you in by the time you got to Tobruk?
Well, funnily enough, not too bad, because we got down almost to the coast and we walked along the ground, and although you could hear firing and that, it seemed to be in the distance, and I presume that they must have gone straight down the road, or, you know, further inland to sort of cut off any troops that were moving back. But
what kind of reception did you get from the Australians in Tobruk?
They did what they possibly could for us. And naturally, being all odds and sods, so to speak, they found us jobs to do. We couldn't integrate into their regiments or that, but we were working on the dock side and helping to unload boats that came in or things like that. And
did you have many German attacks in Tobruk itself?
Well, I don't know if you're aware of the country there, but the nearest airdrome to Tobruk was El Adam, which I should say was, about 15, 20 mile outside of Tobruk. And you could more or less hear the Germans starting their engines to come and bomb you. And they really gave us a bit of a chouse in there, day and night. And
was that when you were on the dockside unloading the ship?
Oh, yes. I mean, they didn't worry about that. I remember one time it was my job to wind that we had those machines that you had, like a tripod, with a handle on it to sound the air raid alarm. Well, you might just have kept it going all the time, because no sooner had one lot finished, another lot came over. Plus the fact that the Germans then had gone well past Tobruk, but they were intent on trying to take Tobruk. But by God, those horses were marvellous. And they were wonderful people. They gave you everything they could afford to give you in the way of food, cigarettes, you name it, they helped you as best they could. And I spent about 3 months in Tobruk, and then one day we got the news that they were bringing in two Australian, I don't think they was destroyers, I think they were a smaller type of naval boat, but whether they were a sloop or what you call it, or frigates. But one was called the Water Hen, and the other one was, the Voyager. And those two came in one night, and everybody that could be spared to get out, all the odds and ends were all put on these two boats, and then we tried to leave the harbour. Well, as you can imagine, with the air raids that we'd had, you could nearly walk across to Brook Harbour on sunken boats. And our boat got stuck on wreckage, and it took them 2 hours to free our boat. And eventually we got clear, and we were out into the Med on our way back to Alex.
This was the Water Hen, was it?
Yeah, I think it was the Water Hen that I was on. I, Yeah, I'm positive it was the water hen. But they were, again, they were brilliant to us. And, you know, they given us everything, drinks, food. And back we came then to Alex.
Were you attacked in the ship?
Only we'd only just got out of the harbour, and we're all lying on the deck, and they must have seen this recce plane up, and suddenly our boat opened up with one of these, I don't know, it was a 4 or a 6 inch gun, and it was one that we didn't all dive in the sea, you can imagine. And but that was the only time. I think what saved us, as we looked back inland to the, you know, like from where we weren't far off the coast, but as we looked back, it looked as though there was an enormous sandstorm on, which I think would have saved us, because, you know, they couldn't get their planes up. But that was the only spot of bother we had on the way back. And we arrived back into Alex. And then they took us to one of these staging camps. It wasn't Kusassim, but I just can't remember the name of the camp we went back to. And then after a short while, we got drafts out from England, and they reformed the battalion. And then we were at it again then.
Was the battalion much changed after reforming?
Yes. I mean, I don't think there were all that many that got back, actually. But, you know, we had a new colonel, and I was still with the same officer, funnily enough. And he was transferred from headquarters, and I went with him. And I'm just trying to think what company. I think I went into B Company. That was the company that whether we lost the entire company at the first go, and my officer was made second in command of the company. And we then went up, we joined the, I think it was the 27th Guards Brigade, and the generals in command at that time, I can't remember whether it was Cunningham. I wouldn't swear to what general it was, but his idea was that he was making these squares, and he was calling them all sort of names, London names, and we were put in with the Guards Brigade in a square. They called it Knightsbridge, which was south of Gazala, and I think our square was the sort of central one. There were others to the left and right of us, but it all pivoted on our particular one. I think we were the biggest square. But I don't know how long it was we were there before Jerry started again.
What were conditions like in the square? I mean, what facilities did you have?
Well, we were deployed in different sections, you know, to take... We weren't in an attacking position. At that precise moment, it was more or less defending and holding what we'd got, and if the opportunity arose, to go forward, sort of thing. But then...
Were you still doing your wireless work?
No, not at that time. I was in an ordinary platoon, you know, sort of digging slit trenches and sort of watching out for different things and going out on patrol, and that was it. And then on the end of our line then that were the Free French at a place called Bir Hakeim. And the first news that we got was that Jerry had put in this big attack and he'd bypassed Hakeim after giving him a right towsing there, but in doing that, he'd come round the, he'd outflanked us, and we had to withdraw. There was no two ways about it. I mean, it was a matter of if we stopped there, we'd have all been roped in. So the order was to withdraw. And boy, that withdrawal, I had things happen, well, we had things happen to us in that time, which we hadn't sort of heard of before, and that was that the Germans were bombing us at night as we were withdrawing. I mean, they, you could hear them coming over, and then the first thing they did was drop out these, what I forget what they call them now, you know, like star shells, and they'd just drift down, lighting up all the area. And then they'd just start, I don't think they could see us or that, but I think it was more for the fact of upsetting everybody, you know, to break the morale down. But I don't think it did that to any great degree, because although we withdrew from there right the way back to Alamein, it didn't, you know, the chaps still kept their spirits up. Naturally, we were all disappointed that we were going back and back and back, but at least they did it systematically, and we still held some sort of a line. I mean, it wasn't a matter of just rabble or anything like that. And that's the way we did till we got right back to Alamein.
Had you suffered many casualties to the
battalion? Oh, yes, yeah. We'd lost quite a few. First of all, at when we were in the Knightsbridge box, and then as we withdrew again, what with the dive bombing and that, we got that all day during the day and during the night as well. But, you know, we lost quite a few friends and that as we came back, but not half as bad as the first time up at Aguila. And we were still in a position when we got to back to Alamein that we could sort of take up a position in the line. So, as you can see, we weren't that smashed about. Although we'd lost quite a few, we were still a workable unit. And we stopped in the line for a few months, and then we was relieved, and they went back. We came back behind the lines, and I don't think that the unit was reformed again then, because when we got back to base, we were just left sitting about and that sort of thing, waiting to see. And then quite a few of us were sent off to other battalions of the Rifle Brigade that were out there. But that was when the officer I'd been with, right from the start, he came into our tent and he just said that he'd come in to say cheerio to us. And my pal and I, we'd been with him all the time. We said, well, you know, where are you going, like? Oh, he said, I'm going to join a new unit that's being formed. And he never said any names or anything. And naturally, we said, well, we've been together all the time. Can't we stick together? So he said, well, you can come with me if you like, but for this one, you have to volunteer. What do you have to do? We said, oh, well, we do a little bit of everything, he said. Running, jumping, you name it, we do it.
What was the name of this chap?
Well, at that time, that was Lieutenant Huff. See, the thing being that when he was made up to second in command of the company that we went to from headquarters, he was made a captain. But on joining the SAS, all officers lose a pip. The captain goes down to lieutenant, a major goes down to a captain, and so forth. And so he joined, but he had to go back to lieutenant. And so we decided, Mick Levy and I, we decided to go with him. We said, right, we'll go, we'll come with you. And that's how I came to join the SAS.
Was Mick Levy also from London?
Yes, his father and mother lived in Petticoat Lane. And after the war, when we met up again, because Mick and I'd weathered him under me. I was like a father figure to him. We was together in the war. When we got captured, he was terrified, because in our section in SAS, we had a Palestinian Jew, a Polish Jew. Mick Levy was an English Jew. There was myself and Lieutenant Huff, and there was one other chap. I can't, for the life of me, remember his. I think you will agree, I've got a fairly good memory. And yet that lad, I can never know. I can't know his name. I can't even, I haven't got a clue about him. And yet, actually, he was the joker who got us caught at the start, because we had one jeep left, and when the lieutenant called him to bring the jeep straight away, he stole it. He stole the jeep, got out and ran, and we never saw him anymore. But the lieutenant said to the other four of us, you get going, I'll hold these up. And that's...